define this.
I almost had Whataburger last weekend.
What? Or
two weeks ago when I was in Albuquerque. And I did not. We were too busy. But I'm going to do it because I'm going back in like a month. So
It's decent. How do you feel about mayonnaise on your hamburger?
I feel like it's peak white person, but like a thin layer I'm cool with, right?
I mean, as long as there's mustard and ketchup, like you can't just have mayo only. Like, yeah, that's
right.
Like,
right. I agree. I'm not a mayo on a burger guy, but I'm not going to complain. Who am I?
I had a lot of sandwiches this week. I had a lot of mayonnaise. I'm kind of good for right now.
Sure.
I mean, the only thing I must have mayonnaise on is like a turkey club.
Yeah.
But like, I could do without it on other stuff.
We're branching out here. We're a true crime podcast, a movie podcast, a mayonnaise podcast.
I still have to try Duke's. I still got to try Duke's.
All right, Tony. We're set for tomorrow.
All right, cool. Book it.
I got it. 11:30 a.m. I will do breakfast. Sorry, all listening folks. This is
keeping this all in raw.
This is episode 76, but we had to take care of some much needed Sunday matinee chills to go see the new John Wick.
There's gonna be 76 kills in John Wick 4.
Oh, it's probably more than that. I hope there's 400.
All right, so yeah, 76. So we have reached the slowest point in the NFL offseason because all the deals are pretty much done.
Yeah, what happened this week? What the hell?
Nothing. Nothing. We got a couple mock drafts to parse over. I've got a 3-page 76. So I'll probably wait.
I got a couple short ones. So
all right. So yeah, Ryan, start us with a shorty. These are my I like these. These are fun.
Okay. Let's start with the first one. We'll go with number 76. He also wore number 71, but mainly 76. Mr. Flozell Adams.
I remember Flozell Adams.
Yeah. Not sure if this is true, but it is believed that it was the first time an NFL franchise had five African American starters on their offensive line. He was part of that.
Wow.
For the Cowboys.
Dude, we always go back to the Cowboys. We're not even Cowboys fans.
Yeah. And that was in 2002. He was drafted in the second round of the 1998 NFL draft. Was expected to go higher, but questions about his partially deaf right ear and his athletic ability made teams wary about his potential value.
You can't block someone, you're deaf.
Yeah, how are you going to hear when someone's blocking you?
It's not the blind side, it's the deaf side.
The deaf side.
Yeah. Played mostly with the Cowboys, and he played like 1 year with the Steelers, like his final year after the Cowboys were done with him.
Damn. All black offensive line.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
I was surprised that was like 2002. I thought it would have been way before that, at least 10 or 20 years before that.
Yeah, when you started that sentence, I was like, oh, like the 70s or the 80s. Cool.
Yeah,
right. Nope, we're just fucking behind the times.
20 years ago.
Yeah, just a notable number 76. I thought that was just an interesting fun factoid.
Yeah, 2002. That's a good one.
A little trivia night.
First all-black offensive line.
Start the flow, right?
Yeah.
It is funny about these because it has expanded my sports knowledge where I can drop dumbass facts to strangers now where I'm like, hey, did you know this person? They're like, sir, this is a Wendy's.
Right, right. No, that's the thing, man. That's all we care. That's why we love sports. We can remember a guy. We can remember a guy. All right. I don't know. Mine's like not super football related, so I can go next if you want.
Like, yeah, if you want to. Mine's football related, but mine's a little bit longer than normal.
Let's do it. So I had a couple different ideas, and I was really tempted to go with Steve Bono's 76-yard rushing touchdown, like this quarterback, and it was like 85% of his career rushing total, because it's like the greatest play-action fake of all time. There's like a huge long video to go along with it, but I decided to go with a story that only gets talked about in Baltimore, but I think it's super fascinating. December 19th, 1976, there's a playoff game in Baltimore's Memorial Stadium where the home team, the Colts, have just lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers 40-14. So it's actually a good thing that Pittsburgh beat the shit out of the Colts at home so bad. So it's 76. Since 1974, there's a law on the books in Maryland saying that all airplanes were banned from flying below 3,000 feet over any sporting arena in the state. I'm letting you guys know that. So at 12:30 p.m., day of the game in Baltimore, Mr. Robert Carrick, who works for the state aviation department, is sitting at a bus stop waiting for a shuttle to get him to the stadium. At this point, a car pulls up being driven by a man named Donald Croner. These men have never met before, but Croner's like, "Oh, you're just sitting here, man? Are you going to the game? I'll give you a ride." Carrick's like, "Oh, okay, sounds good." Croner is an erratic driver, but somehow it comes up that both men love aviation. So Donald Croner tells this guy he's in for a show because one of Croner's friends is going to fly over the stadium at halftime and drop rolls of toilet paper on the field.
Oh, my God.
So little does Carrick know that Donald Croner is talking about himself. Croner drops off his passengers, and instead of going to the stadium, he drives to the local airport. Now, I'm going to get a little bit into Donald Croner here. Some of it could be murky, so let's try to, I'm going to let you know where the sources are from. He was a former military air controller. He had his commercial flying license revoked in 1971 for psychiatric reasons.
Dude, lead gas fucked up an entire generation of human beings.
Yep. And this dude, I mean, Vietnam, right? So so he found some lawyers that helped him get it back. So Baltimore Sun would run a story after what we're going to talk about today. But they're alleging that U.S. customs officials had Donald Croner like working with federal agents to fly below radar altitude to South America as part of a drug bust operation. He was going to fly. Yeah, dude.
You have to fly below like 500 feet to be under radar.
This is cocaine cowboys.
Yeah, right. So he's going to fly in, pick up a few kilos of coke, which, I mean, sounds like a party. He was working for free for the U.S. Customs Service for a few months because he wanted to bust people for drugs to stop. And this is a quote from the news article. To stop ruining the lives of several young women students at Towson State University, end quote. So, dude sounds like the fucking Joker, right?
Ask any American where Towson State is on a map. It doesn't exist. It's not real. It's fabricated. Well,
is it Towson, Maryland?
No, this is, I'm assuming it's Oregon, or I don't even know at this point.
Hold on, I'll look it up.
Okay, very important. So, he was pulled from the program because he kept wanting to move the timeline up to make the bust and make it happen sooner, which not sketchy at all, right? And apparently got into a fist fight with one of the men he was investigating.
By the way, I was right. Towson State University is in Towson, Maryland.
Very nice. Oh, very nice.
One guy in America knows where Towson is.
I'm giving you your flowers for that one, Ryan.
Just because I know my Baltimore and Maryland geography.
Of course. So supposedly at the time of this playoff game, the plan was still in motion, but people in the government were unsure because this dude is like a walking red flag. So that's all the stuff from the Baltimore Sun report. Now let's go back to the stuff we can confirm. He's been super fucking erratic lately. He's been swooping around the stadium as well as the Colts practice field where he was dropping blue and white like formal neckties on the field. Like, oh, weird. Yeah. Colts quarterback Burt Jones thought like, oh, there's this guy flying over our field dropping like neckties on the field. That might be the same guy that showed up to my house a few weeks earlier who said he was a huge Colts fan, knew I was into aviation, and decided to just, you know, show up and talk football and planes.
The first parasocial fan.
Oh, dude, right? And this was like NFL MVP Burt Jones, quarterback, and you just got this dude showing up at his house like, you like planes? The Colts took down the number of his plane and sent it to the FAA, and there's no real explanation as to why nothing happened. We don't know.
Weird.
Yeah. So Colts retired linebacker Bill Pellington ran a bar in suburban Baltimore at this time called the Iron Horse. And it was a place where current and former Colts players like to hang out. So Kroner goes to that bar a few weeks before the game, tells Pellington, I'm going to land a plane at the stadium. He gets belligerently drunk and gets into it with a bunch of different people at the bar. Pellington's like, get the fuck out. And Kroner's like, I'm going to firebomb your building. he does not, but not long after this, like the next week, a plane flies low over the building and drops a full bottle and two rolls of wet yellow toilet paper on the building.
What?
All right. So he's arrested and released on bail. So now let's recap real quick. This dude's been arrested. He's gotten into a ton of trouble. He's been stalking the QB like he's Robert De Niro in The Fan. And his pilot's license is still active. Everyone's like, cool.
And he's like kind of being funded by the government.
Kind of, right?
Yeah. It's like some CIA shit.
Right.
Like normally if something doesn't get reported to the FAA, it's usually like super covert. Cause like there's always investigations, any incidents for the FAA.
Yeah. But this is also pre 9/11.
Yeah, they didn't give a fuck. Like, whatever, dude.
So let me just keep run a list of people that he's told that he's going to fly a plane into the stadium. All right. His mailman.
Nice.
The guy he drives to the game. Some people at a bar. And he hires a woman to film a plane stunt video for him that day. And yeah. he's got no trouble renting a plane.
He's like the 70s like version of like Hot Rod. Like, just telling everyone, dude, I'm doing stunts.
He's like DB Cooper, right? So anyways, so this game is a blowout, thank God. And I'm going to hop in here and talk about where I got some of the information I used today. The Baltimore Sun, a few different papers, but the most in-depth source was from Secret Base, which is a Sports Illustrated YouTube channel. I can't recommend it enough. There's a million great videos on there. It's super data-driven and really fun. But the reason why I bring this up is because they have some of the local Baltimore Colts play-by-play announcers and play audio. They play audio from the radio broadcast after Pittsburgh kicks a field goal to go up 26-7 in the second quarter. You can fucking hear an airplane during the call of the field goal. You can hear it.
That's crazy.
So according to FAA Administrator John J. McLucas, the plane, this is after the fact, the plane takes several passes over the stadium at an altitude of less than 500 feet.
Oh my God.
So while this is happening, a guy named Dan Ragan is in the stands and he's like, holy shit, that's one of the planes from the airport I work at. So he goes into the stadium from his seat to call his airfield and report it. He talks to someone named Lois Wilson, the manager of the airport, who cannot get a hold of Kroner on the radio. So after his passes, I have no clue how this happened, but he does his passes. He goes back to the airport, watches some of the game on the TV in the lobby, rents a different plane, and takes off from the airport when the score is 33-14 in the fourth. I'm not sure how or if the calls went somewhere else or if they were later on, but like he just rents a new plane.
That was somebody who said, you know what? That's not in my job description.
Right.
Here you go.
Right.
Here's the key, sir. Have a good day.
Yeah. Right. What am I, the fucking air cops? No, I'm good, man. So I find this like this timeline super interesting, but I didn't see any journalist be like, what's up? What happened? Like I said, apparently the people at the airport didn't even know he showed up on a plane before renting the second plane.
What?
I know. So once again, let me give a big shout out to Secret Base, who gets an NBC camera shot from a low angle looking up at Mean Joe Green. And you can see the plane in the sky above the stadium. He is buzzing Damn. The stadium as the players are still on the field while the game is winding down. Fans are leaving as the score reaches 40-14 midway through the fourth. All the starters come out for Pittsburgh and they run out the clock. So the fans are leaving, bleachers are empty. Kroner's plan is to circle the stadium, fly over the towers, square up, buzz the field, fly back out in through the open north end because it's built like a horseshoe, and then fly directly up and swoop right in front of the upper deck and fly out of the stadium. Oh, so the field is empty of players and coaches. And the only people that are there are like grounds crew and some media people. He gets within 10 feet of the 50-yard line and then jerks his plane forward, almost hitting two sports writers who were chatting near the end zone. During his ascent, witnesses said it looked like he was attempting to circle the upper deck, but the engine sputtered and the small plane crashed into the bleachers.
Oh my God.
Luckily, the bleachers were completely empty, but the game was being played 10 minutes before this happened. So if it wasn't a blowout, there's a chance that there were fatalities, but there were no fatalities.
See, this goes from potential terrorism to really cool stunt.
Right?
Right? Yeah, right?
So he suffers minor injuries. He gets released from the hospital and arrested. A Baltimore City judge ruled him guilty of two counts of malicious destruction of property and one count of reckless and unsafe operation of an aircraft. He was out in 2 years. So before I finish, I need to point out the similarities between this event and a movie that happened the year after called Black Sunday, which I think we should do a TH Fantasy movie review of Black Sunday. It's a thriller. It stars Robert Shaw and Bruce Dern. All right. It revolves around terrorists crashing a Goodyear blimp into the stands during the Super Bowl.
All right. I'm gonna hit something controversial right now. How do you get a Goodyear blimp going more than 2 miles an hour?
You don't.
Yeah, it'd be like that. It'd be like that scene in Austin Powers where they're going really slow and the guy's just like, no.
So it's weird because not only did the NFL let the lead guy on the field during the previous year's Super Bowl to like get some film, you can see the Steelers running out of the tunnel to go take the Super Bowl the year before, and you can see the actor, Robert Shaw, on the field.
So wait, Tony, I've got Black Sunday 1960 film, 1977 nope. film. Yep,
that's the one.
Also an album by Cypress Hill.
All right, we'll review the movie and the Cypress Hill album.
Okay.
So they actually filmed some group chaos scenes of the terrorist attack with NFL players in it as extras, kind of like they did with Dark Knight, right? With Ben Roethlisberger and Heinz Ward.
Remember this trauma you experienced? You want to experience it again, but you're going to get paid.
Ryan, I got to tell you, some of the players that were in that group chaos scene, Elsie Greenwood, Mike Webster, Jack Ham, Mel Blunt.
Oh my God, for real?
That's like four of our guys.
Right. So I'm looking this up right now too, because apparently it's on Paramount Plus, which I have through Amazon. Let me see if I got it.
Okay. So anyways, it's wild to me that the NFL would allow the use of their images and logos for a movie like that.
Money talks, man.
Despite the similarities.
It's also amazing that the FAA would allow someone to buzz a stadium and crash within it.
Well, so despite the similarities, there's no direct tie between Croner and the movie. Also, by the way, that movie directed by Robert Evans.
Really?
Yep. So the Steelers lost to the Raiders in the playoffs the next week. Donald Croner served his jail time and then stole two Greyhound buses from Dulles Airport in 1980 as an employee of Greyhound buses in Dulles Airport. He died in 2013, and that is my 76, the Donald Croner Air Show in Baltimore.
Dude, that's crazy. That's just a quirked up white boy. Oh, that's all he was. Just quirky.
Yeah, goated with the CIA sauce.
He was doing a bunch of like blow too.
Oh, probably. Dude, think about it. Like, I'm going to rescue these poor college girls. He's either the Joker or someone who's trying.
Right.
I don't know how you don't do that sober. Like, any of those thoughts put together is not a, hey, you know what I should do?
Like, you know what I mean? Like Ryan said, if you're flying at like low enough to escape radar over the fucking ocean, bro, you're going to get caught by like a giant octopus. It's going to fucking grab you.
Yeah, you can't do that now because everybody will shoot you down with their fucking ARs.
It's true.
You don't even need the CIA or the Navy to roll out to drone strike you down. Just your neighbor's going to shoot that dude down out of the sky.
All right, so that's my 76. Who's next?
That was a wild one.
I can do my next short one. Let's talk about Mr. Jumbo Elliott.
Oh, yeah.
I almost did Jumbo Elliott.
Number 76, offensive tackle. for 14 years in the NFL for the Giants from 88 to 95 and the Jets from 96 to 2000.
Basically almost everywhere Bill Parcells went.
Yep. He was in the 1990 Super Bowl that the New York Giants won.
Yep.
All Madden player. Went to the University of Michigan.
Oh, he was All Madden? Huge.
Yes. As a freshman, he was 6 foot 7 inches, 280 pounds as a freshman at University of Michigan.
Jesus.
By his junior year, he was 306 pounds.
Holy fuck.
Dude, he bankrupted that family.
Freshman 15, baby.
In 1985, that Michigan team was 10-1-1 and outscored their opponents 342-98.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Pretty good team.
Oh, shit.
Was selected by the Giants in 1988 draft. Like I said, 8 seasons with the Giants from 88 to 95. 112 games for the Giants, 98 of them at starting left tackle. He missed 8 games in the middle of the 90 season. So yeah, okay, so yeah, he missed 8 games that season. When he was in, the team was averaging 150 yards rushing. When he was out, they averaged 111.
Jesus.
So he was pretty key to that Giants offensive line.
Yeah, and as a left tackle, as a run blocker, that's nuts. Right? That's usually not a run blocking position as much.
So in 96, he signed with the Jets, a 5-year contract, played 85 games with the Jets. But here's Elliott's most famous moment, all right? It was on Monday Night Football on October 23rd, 2000. Late in the fourth quarter, the Jets were down by 7 points to the Miami Dolphins when Elliott caught his only career pass, thrown by none other than Mr. Vinny Testaverde for a touchdown to tie the game at 37-37.
And he bobbled that shit, too.
Yeah. This marked the end of the Jets' comeback from being down by 23 points in the fourth quarter. The Jets won 40-37 in overtime. The game has now become known as the Monday Night Miracle.
Jumbo fucking Elliott, man.
Yep.
We love a big man touchdown.
It's the best. Yeah. It's the best.
Full name, John Stewart Elliott.
But Jumbo's a lot cooler.
But Jumbo's a lot better. Yeah.
I was actually doing a different Jumbo when I was looking at it. He was like a 1910s baseball player, and he was called Jumbo because he was 6'3".
For 1910, that's like you might as well be 7'5",
right? That's a good one, Jumbo Elliott, bringing the Hall of Famer into the discussion. All right, Shane. Yep.
All right, so mine also involves a plane towards the ladder. Yeah, I don't. There's just some weird part of all of our brains is linked together. We don't even communicate these. We don't even talk about who has who until we are actually live.
Right.
So my 76 is the coach of the fifth place AFC West 0-14 Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
There we go.
They switched to the NFC South in 2002. They're actually part of the NFC Central from 77 forward. I thought it was interesting to have 5 teams in division.
That that was the Bears division. So it was it was Chicago, Minnesota, Detroit, Green Bay, Tampa Bay.
And my guy is resident complicated dickhead John McKay.
Okay.
So like most of our recent players, McKay served in World War II, foregoing a scholarship to Wake Forest as his widowed mother got sick. So he worked as an electrician's apprentice in a coal mine. His dad died in a coal mine. So I think he was just destined in his brain to perpetuate the same cycle.
Yep.
So McKay enlisted in the Army in 42 and was a tail gunner in a B-29 and saw action in the Pacific Theater. I don't want to excuse his current or not future behavior, but a lot of the things he experiences, I'm like, you know what? I get it, right? I get why you're difficult. So after he was done in the military, he played halfback at Purdue and Oregon State. He split shares and didn't have any standout success on either team, but his teams were dog shit without him. So he did play a role. So after graduating, he decided to become a coach. He was an assistant coach at Oregon for 9 years, an assistant at USC for 1 year, and head coach of USC for 15 years. He went 8-11-1 in his first two seasons as head coach, and he was under heavy scrutiny to be fired. This is like a big commonplace throughout his career. The university president gave one more year as head coach as McKay would finally have a team. He actually recruited himself because at this time USC was under probation and had limited availability to recruit during this time. So USC is always in trouble because it's Southern California and some buck wild shit happens.
Yes.
So in his final test year that he was allotted, he turned the team around and they went 11-0, won the Rose Bowl. During McKay's tenure there, they won four national championships. And during one of those time frames, the 1972 squad is regarded as one of the best college teams of all time. The team went 12-0, defeating five teams ranked 18th or higher by an average of 22 points. They never trailed in any second half of any game. And their closest game was a 9-point win over Stanford.
Oh my God.
So during his time at USC, he popularized the I formation, which I'm a big fan of. Just run up the middle. No coward shit.
All right, baby. Let's go.
So after his long tenured success at USC and being the most winning coach there in campus history, he received multiple offers from NFL teams, but instead chose the Bucks as there was a five-fold salary increase compared to the other teams because it was a new franchise and he kind of wanted to test himself and build a franchise from the ground up.
Sure.
So in his first 2 years as head coach, the Bucks went 2-26. They went 0-24 their first 24 games. So, he got a lot of flack for that for his entire career, and a lot of people still couldn't forgive him. So patience prevailed, and the Bucks clinched the NFC Central Division in 79 and managed to go to the playoffs in 81-82. And in 82, things kind of start to unravel for McKay because he encourages star QB Doug Williams to get a better contract, as Doug Williams was making less than 12 backups in the NFL. And as we're seeing with the Lamar situation, or we may see with the Lamar situation, Williams bounces to the USFL because he says, all right, you ain't going to pay me, I'm gone. The Bucs struggles, McKay resigns after the abysmal season, and his son later states that McKay deeply regretted leaving USC the second week he left.
All right, I'm going to make a wild assumption here. Now this, you know, we're about to go woke here. Do you think there's a chance that maybe Doug Williams was not as appreciated as a quarterback by the NFL because of the color of his skin?
Don't worry, I'm going to cover that.
Oh boy.
So before we talk about our liberal agenda, McKay finished as an NFL coach with a record of 44-88-1 and was posthumously inducted to the Bucks Ring of Honor in 2010, which people are still like upset about to this day because, like I said before, they can't forgive him for starting 0-24.
Ring of Honor worthy, man.
Yeah, so here's kind of where the controversy begins. It started like in 77 era. Dick could be a raging dickhead or your greatest offender. His biggest double-edged sword was his mouth. Towards the end of his tenure, he didn't really meet with players before or after the game, and he started calling fans, reporters, any detractors, idiots. And in 77 is when he kind of began his old white man moment of hiring all yes men. In 82, he traded away players to the Chargers as he viewed them as outspoken and just didn't want to deal with them anymore.
Oh,
and then he also put his son in as starting wide receiver that a lot of the players internally viewed as a sign of nepotism, and he was clearly incapable of playing the position.
That's awesome.
So in the duality of peak old white guy, he would describe his poor pass catching running backs as fabulous, but then would go on a tirade against a reporter who insinuated that Doug Williams was mentally inferior because he was black and only would refer to him as a black QB.
Woof. Good. It's weird how people like that have how they view the world, right?
Yeah. Racism, bad. Homophobia. Okay.
Right. Like, Well, as long as he's straight, that's fine by me. Like, by all metrics, Doug Williams was a fine quarterback.
Yeah, he was the Super Bowl champion. Yeah, so I don't know, man. People are weird. So yeah. McKay also had to publicly apologize to the media as he went on a threatening and swearing rampage against a pack of racist fans at one point in his tenure as a coach. So dude's a man about that action. In his final game, he enraged the New York Jets and encouraged a giant league fine in which he attempted to secure an NFL yardage record scoring for running back James Wilder Sr., and he told his team to lie down and allow the Jets to score a touchdown to quickly regain possession of the ball.
Hell yeah. Dude, this is a fantasy football podcast. I want that shit.
I know. Love that shit. Let, rack up the score, dude. Let me hit the over.
Yeah.
All right. So McKay is kind of known as like a quote machine. I pulled like the best ones because there's some ones where I'm like, oh, you can't really say that nowadays. Not that they're like blatantly like racist or anything, but there's a lot of undertones where I'm like,
sure.
Not the best take, but he's also like 85 at this time, so he doesn't give a shit. So following a Bucks loss, McKay was asked, what's it like to lose in the professional ranks, coach? Anything special? And he replied, no, I was beat 51 in college. It's about the same thing. So McKay also told his players that the games were won and lost in the trenches. He spotted then Howard Fest sleeping in the back. McKay yelled, Fest, were their games won and lost? Fest replied, right here at the Buccaneers, coach. This was during his tenure of his 0-24 run. They had a kicker named Capiche, and McKay said Capiche is kaput after Bill Capiche missed a field goal winning field goal game in the final game of the 1983 season. So he's going full mask off.
Yeah.
After the Bucks won their first regular season against the New Orleans Saints during the 77 downward spiral, this is actually their first win. In his tenure, and he stated 3 or 4 plane crashes and we're in the playoffs.
Oh my God.
After a special teams failure that caused the Vikings to win instead of clinching first place in the NFC Central, McKay said, I'm sick and tired of booing me. They should boo the people who can't block for shit.
I love that. This dude rules. Well, yeah. He's complicated, like
he's, yeah. He's a he's like your complicated uncle. You're like, I don't know if I should support you, but I like you for who you are.
Yeah.
And his final, my favorite quote was after receiving harsh criticism about from the media about his coaching skills. McKay replied, "You guys don't know the difference between a football and a bunch of bananas." In the next interview, members of the media left bananas for McKay as a joke, and he replied, "You guys don't know the difference between a football and a Mercedes Benz."
That's that old-timey wit, man.
Yeah, he was sharp-tongued, man. And that's sure. That's my 76, John McKay.
John McKay, I like John McKay. Yeah. I'm not gonna call him my guy, but you know,
he has qualities I like.
yeah, he speaks his mind. So, is that it for 76?
Yeah,
I think so. That was a good round of 76.
Yeah.
So let's take a break, and then we really, you know, like I said, it's the lull of the season, but we'll talk about a little mock draft, and then we'll go from there. And we're gone. Back, we've got a mock draft to go over, and I think that'll probably take up most of our time. this was an ESPN. It was like a 7-round, right, Shane?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and it just dropped, and since we're at the point of the season where all we have to do is talk shit about people's mock drafts, let's talk about it and talk about what this does for fantasy. Now, I have in a 10-team Superflex 101, trying to trade back to 102. My pitch was 101 for 102 and 202.
I think honestly, it's fair, and for most sharp leagues, that's the best you're gonna get. Because I posted to you, if someone traded 101 away for what? It was like 104, 103, and like a 24 first.
Yeah,
and I'm like
someone that's really close.
Yeah, that's true belief in yourself.
But looking at this mock draft, if I have pick 102, I'm taking Anthony Richardson. If he's the fourth pick overall in the NFL draft to the Colts, come on, man.
I don't see why you wouldn't, right? Like, I know we talked about this last week. I'm taking Richardson at 101. I don't give a shit, right? Like, I'm going to give my league mates a gift, but you know what? I'm swinging for the fences. And if you take him at 102, if you can get a second on top of that, if you're doing what I'm doing, but also getting like a Jalen Hyatt type or like a Sean Tucker or Marvin Mims or Zach Evans type, you know what I mean?
Right,
like
right.
That's especially if you're shattered at depth, like I think that's more than worth it.
Ryan, I've been listening to a ton of, you know, other dynasty podcasts and stuff like that.
Sure.
And so a lot of these people are low on Richardson, but if you have the first pick in the draft, your team sucks, right? So you're shooting for the ceiling.
Or you're lucky where you fleeced somebody whose team collapsed, or they're just bad at dynasty.
Well, I'd like to know Ryan, because Ryan's a floor guy. And so we got asked by some of the guys from the Long Game Dynasty to join their dynasty league, and it's like a $200 buy-in, and everything has to be co-managed. So it'll be the three of us co-managing a dynasty team, and I'm so interested to see what our draft strat looks like, because Ryan has always been a floor guy.
Well, when are we doing the draft for that?
We don't know yet. I don't know if that's been solidified yet. They're going to invite us to like a big group chat to go over like the rules and what we want.
And how are they going to determine the draft order?
There's a few different ways to do it. I always prefer the WWE 2K. Everyone gets a character in a Royal Rumble.
That's funny. Yeah.
But this mock draft has Stroud to Carolina, Young to Houston, Richardson to Indy, Levis to Vegas.
I think Vegas just debated everybody and gave away their entire game plan by saying Jalen Carter is not on their draft board. I think they're going to take Jalen Carter.
That was such a silly thing to say. Why are you saying anything? You know what I mean? I also think I don't think Jalen Carter makes it past Seattle at five. I'm saying it. Like, Seattle is at full luxury pick mode.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Ryan will remember last year, I was so high on both of the offensive linemen that the Seahawks drafted. Their tackles. Because they drafted a left tackle and a right tackle. And I was like, I wanted the Bears to get Abraham Lucas, who ended up being their right tackle. And both of those tackles started every snap for the team last year.
Yeah, right.
So
I mean, someone could trade up to Arizona too, because I don't think Arizona wants that pick, even though they could take Jalen Carter, right?
I think they go Will Anderson. It's Will Anderson for me. I think Seattle takes Jalen Carter because it's a luxury pick. Look at how much they nailed
the draft
last year's draft.
Yeah.
They got 100%. Two starting offensive linemen. They had, let's be real, the actual defensive rookie of the year. This is like, you trust your process, right? If you nailed five draft picks last year and you have two first round picks, you take the guy at five that is number one in terms of talent and just be like, we're building a culture. Like, so Russ Wilson's gone, man. If I was Anthony, or if I was Jalen Carter and I had to work with Russell Wilson, fuck, man. You thought I was driving fast before.
He'd be in jail again.
Someone already proposed a trade to me. I got to look it up. But I just got a notification.
Breaking news.
Let's see what it is. I don't know if you said this on air, but I just put in our $69 fab budget dynasty league, I put Tyreek Hill, Nick Chubb, and Ezekiel Elliott on the trade block. Let's see what he's offering me. It's from Zach 10.
Oh, boy.
Of course it is. It
sure is.
Okay, so he wants me to give him Nick Chubb and Josh Allen, and I would get Deshaun Watson, Travis Etienne, and Khalil Herbert.
That's a terrible trade.
Yeah, I want picks. I don't want players.
Just what?
Josh Allen. I have to give up Josh Allen and Nick Chubb, and he gives me a massage rapist, Travis Etienne, and Khalil Herbert.
That's
insulting, dude.
I don't even want to counter. I'm just going to decline it.
That's terrible. But I will say Zach's usually pretty good about following up and being like, what are you looking for?
Not that fucking trash you just sent me.
Yeah.
Let's start there. Okay. Well, let's talk like, what are we expecting out of that package? Right. Not Josh Allen. Cause to me, Josh Allen, unless like you're getting a replacement level top 10 quarterback and like a very high end first and like a 24 first, I'm not talking, right?
Yeah, I want the worst I would accept for Josh Allen would be Kenny Pickett in 2 firsts.
Yeah, or the worst, or like Tua, right? Where like they're in the same kind of category for me. Like sure. I know Tua has that upside, but he could also turn to like mashed potato. Of like I'll mitigate the risk of that end, but yeah,
yeah.
If you're paying up for a big boy like that, I need you to hurt. There was a Ragey Q trade. It was Patrick Mahomes for 101, I think 104, 2 seconds, and like a 24 first. And everyone's like, yeah, I think you'd still take Mahomes.
Probably.
So unless I know you're like hurting to rebuild that team, but I think that unless like you're getting a massive overpay for Josh Allen, you don't sell him, especially for that fucking garbage package.
Yeah. I mean, I'm tempted, Ryan. I'm tempted to send you. I think I have. Let me pull it up. Maybe we could strike a deal on air, Ryan. What do you think?
This is insider trading, just like AMC.
It says I have 1-9, and then you have 2-9.
All right, watch this.
Well, 24 first, right? Tony, you have his 24 first, not this upcoming pick.
I thought I had another.
Oh, that's right. I did that other trade. So now I have.
You have 107.
Yeah, I have 1-7 and 1-9.
Hope you like Will Levis and Charbonnet. Maybe Quentin Johnston.
I do like Charbonnet because the last mock drafts we did, he went to the Bears, and it looks like this one went to Dallas.
Ryan, I'm going to throw you a bone here, and I'm going to make you a mega offer right now.
Oh shit.
And Shane, I want you to be as neutral towards appraising this as possible. Your boy, Tony, that's me. I would receive Josh Allen and 69 fab dollars. I would send to Ryan 69 fab dollars. Daniel DeNeros, Danny Dimes.
Okay.
This year's pick 104. This year's pick 106 and your 2024 first round pick back.
Oh shit.
That's a good offer. That's a thinker. Cause all right. So 104 is QB3 of the class, right? It could be your Bryce Young. It could be your A Rich, depending on where you stand. 106?
106.
So yeah. Gibbs, JSN, maybe Flowers, depending on how the draft shakes out. And then that 24 first will probably be high, right?
Yeah. If Ryan's rebuilding, I would assume that would be pick 102, 101 next year, maybe 103.
And Danny Dimes is a top 10 to 15 quarterback, not in like dynasty rankings, but like finishing, right?
Hopefully, yeah.
All right, Ryan, you do with it what you want. I just sent it your way. That's a thing.
Yeah, propose it, and I'll take a few days and think about it. That would give me 4 first round picks this year.
And your first round back next year.
And that's important. The first is right. that's the juice. And I appreciate that of giving up that high valued asset to get who you want.
I know Zach 10 wants Josh Allen. He just sent me a message. I'll look at it later, but because I rejected his initial trade and he was like,
yeah.
he wanted something about he said something about Josh Allen. I gotta look at it.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I don't think
I don't think he's gonna have a good offer as that.
That you're not gonna get a better offer for that. That is me paying. That's me pushing him in right now. Like I have these. I've talked about it on the show before. My wide receiver room in that league is stupid. Pittman, AJ Brown, Debo, Burks, Isaiah Hodgins, Jahan Dotson, George Pickens. That's a wide receiver core that could get me where I need to go.
All right, so let's circle it back to the mock we're doing where let's say we'll go through a couple of these picks and we'll say if Ryan gets those picks, who he will take on these teams.
Okay.
So we can kind of lump it all in.
I'm going to write this down, okay?
That's not a bad range. I mean, to me personally, like the tier kind of falls off after 106. But you might have a guy slip, especially if you're dictating two of those top six picks. If you can kind of force the board to fall in a specific way and like manipulate the way the draft is going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. So Ryan has.
It also kind of depends like what teams need, right? So like in one of my leagues, the guy who has 105 has zero starting running backs. So even though I would take JSN there and say fuck a running back, I'll take him in the third. He probably will take Gibbs just based on like how I know how that guy operates. Cause he took like a bunch of dudes in the second last year who didn't pan out. So it's kind of also about knowing your league and trying to like predict how the thing falls, where 4 might be a gift to you, right? Like your league might be down on Richardson and you just take the gamble, especially if you have your 101 next year too, or a high end 101, you can get Harrison, you can get,
yeah, Caleb,
one of the top three guys. I think that's a good potentially if you do the trade.
So let's sketch this out. So 101, let's just assume Bijan. We just write Bijan in.
Who in this mock draft is going to the Chargers?
That's wild shit.
Dude, this mock, I was at lunch with my dad and I was like, hey, check this shit out. He's like, I don't know these people. Are they good? I was like, yes, they're all good.
Okay, so let's mock out picks 1, 2, and 3 here. So Bijan is to San Diego. So 2 is probably Stroud.
Or Bryce. Or again, it depends if your league is high on Richardson or not. So it's a crapshoot. Let's say Stroud just for floor, right?
Okay.
Which is going to Carolina in this mock.
And so then we'll say 103, we'll go with, do we go Bryce Young to Houston? Or do we go Richardson? Because I think, Shane, we are in the minority of people that will take Richardson that high.
Yeah, Reddit is like lower on him compared to like the fantasy people that I follow. So I think 103 again is floor of Bryce, right? Because a lot of people still have Bryce as QB1.
Right.
As they should. I don't blame them for that. You know what I mean? You got your preference.
So Ryan would have a choice between Richardson and Will Levis at 104. And I think you would want Richardson in Indy at 104
Levis in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I saw an interesting tweet where it's like, if you like Will Levis, you're going to love Anthony Richardson because he's just dialed to 11 of what Will Levis can do.
So then let's say then 105 is JSN.
Yeah, just to be safe because he's climbing up. And I can foresee people taking him at 104, right? Where I've been looking at my picks at 104 and being like, if these top quarterbacks go, I don't know.
Right. Now, I'm looking at Ryan. I'm trying to pull up Ryan's roster real quick because I also think, you know, depending on who else you have at quarterback, Garoppolo, who's a starter, Derek Carr, who's a starter. That's not bad. Because at 106, you've got Levis still. You've got Quentin Johnson. You got Jordan Addison. So let's talk about these options real quick. I don't know how you feel about Levis, but you've got 106 and 107 in this hypothetical. So the next two players are yours. Right. So you can either take You can take Jahmyr Gibbs going to Miami, which is pretty good. Or you could take Quentin Johnson to Baltimore, Jordan Addison to Minnesota, Zay Flowers to the Giants. 106 and 107. Shane, what are you doing with those two picks? If we've got Bijan, Stroud, Young, A. Rich at 104 and JSN gone.
I know we've been shitting on Will Levis, right? But I think just for positional advantage in super flex leagues, unless you know that the league is going to fade Will Levis later, I think you just kind of got to snatch him up and be like, all right, if you give me Garoppolo numbers or Derek Carr numbers, I'm fine with the 106, right? Because it's just replacement level for guys that are like, you know, only have 1 or 2 years left in the league. Unless you're going to offload them, you kind of need to get the younger guy who has the ability to have rushing upside.
I agree. Ryan would be taking the two higher risk quarterbacks of the top 10.
Yeah.
But you're locked out of those positions unless you trade up or someone lets someone fall to you, right? Like unless you trade up to 103 to get Bryce, you're kind of stuck with who you have. Unless you don't want Richardson, you just want JSN, right? Like if you did that, I wouldn't fault you. I wouldn't do it, but
You could at 104, you'd have the choice between, you know, pick 104 Anthony Richardson, or you could take Jaxon Smith-Njigba at Houston. Like, I think JSN is obviously that's the safer play, but I also think, I mean, you just gave up your quarterback one. Like, you need a moonshot. Like, yeah, if right. Richardson hits and he becomes Jalen Hurts, not next year or not this year, but the year after, and you have pick 101. For next year, like
and this mock has Richardson in like his best position for me being drafted in Indy. I think that's like his highest ceiling availability.
Who slips? Who has the highest likelihood out of Bijan, Stroud, and Young to slip to Ryan at 104? Is it Young?
I'd say it's Young. Yeah,
I think Ryan would be pretty happy with Bryce Young at pick 104.
And a lot of things I've been hearing too is even though like people have doubts about Houston or his size or whatever, he still slots into a top 15 value in dynasty as a quarterback. Yep. He probably won't crack the top 10 unless he goes ballistic, but like he's one of those picks where you're not drafting him like Will Levis and you're already losing value, where Will Levis has a stank on him. It doesn't matter where you take him in the first, he's going to be a hard sell unless he balls out for 2 years, where Bryce Young can kind of be like two a year one, kind of mid, whatever. And he'll still maintain that value of he won't get you 103, but you could probably sell him for like 105 if you wanted to, right? If you didn't believe in what you saw on film for that year.
So 106 and 107. So Shane, you would if you at 106, and then where do you go 107? Do you go Gibbs?
I think you have to. Like, even though like if you're a rebuilding team, I don't think you should take a high end running back, but like the value of KTC has him as like a top 10 running back starting. He hasn't even been drafted yet because Bijan's obviously number one. But yeah, I think you take Gibbs, see what happens, right? If like, I think people are a little bit ambitious of just comparing him to like peak Kamara. Alvin Kamara of output, right? Like the talent's there, but.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ryan, since I'm the person, so you have 104, 106, 107, and 109 if you accept this offer. I have 108.
Ooh.
So I'm going to tell you right now, with the way, if you accept that trade and I get Josh Allen, that means I'm pushing my chips in. That means I'm going for it. So right.
You're taking Charbonnet.
I'm going Gibbs. I'm taking a running back because that's an asset that I need to produce right now. And my running back room is Donta Foreman, Jeff Wilson, Raheem Mostert, like garbage.
So this is going to be an interesting thing. Do we see potentially Charbonnet leapfrogging Gibbs in the draft? I know all of us on our tape and our scores have Gibbs in his own tier. But is there a world where we see Charbonnet leapfrogging in fantasy drafts being the second running back drafted in leagues?
Yeah. I mean, Ryan,
I could see it with the way guys are talking on the Fantasy Sports Channel about Charbonnet.
And look at the landing spot in this draft. Dallas, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, like, I don't care what round he goes in. People are like, oh, fourth is too late. I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? If he's going to be in that position to be the workhorse, because I know people are Tony Pollard truthers, but the dude does not have the build to do that. And even if they go committee, Charbonnet has the ability to be that. And the dude just broke his leg, right? So, like, what is his ceiling coming back?
Yeah. Well, there's a chance that Ryan, say, goes Levis and Gibbs, and I'm stuck at 108. I mean, it's a two tight end league, and my tight ends are Isaiah Likely, Trey McKitty, and like Grant Calcaterra. All right. So there's a world in a two tight end league. Yeah. If I'm making a push that I go Michael Mayer at 108 and Ryan ends up with Gibbs and Charbonnet.
Cause where did, so Darnell Washington was, oh no, Dalton King. No. Yeah. Sorry. Michael Mayer is the first tight end drafted and the 29th pick to New Orleans.
To New Orleans, Ryan. You know how Derek Carr loves tight ends.
That's a sweet spot. And then Kincaid goes to Vegas in the second. Darnell Washington goes to Green Bay, like we talked about on the last episode or two episodes ago, to Green Bay in the second. Luke Musgrave to the Chargers. Yeah. That's sexy. I like that pick.
That's fun.
Porta goes to Cincinnati, another good landing spot. Kraft goes to Tennessee. So I there's like options.
In Miami. Ryan's going to fall in love with Shoemaker in Miami.
There's options. So, I mean, in a two tight end league, like I don't blame you for going 108, especially when your depth kind of sucks if you're pushing, right? Like tight ends take a little bit to boil, but we know Mayer can do it, right? Even though he's not hyper athletic, he's a yak monster. And Derek Carr can't really bomb the ball.
So then if we're looking once again at this Ryan draft here, so we go Bijan, Stroud, Young. Ryan gets Anthony Richardson. JSN goes 105. Ryan goes Levis, Gibbs. I go Mayer. Ryan could pull Jordan Addison, Zay Flowers, Quentin Johnson. You still get one of the top three receivers in the draft.
It's whoever you want on your pick of poison, because I think all these landing spots are decent. Like Quentin Johnston to Baltimore is probably like the best in my opinion. I mean, maybe Addison to Minnesota to run next to, we talked about this last time, next to Justin Jefferson to open up the field, and his route tree is really good. And I think Mid-Kirk can feed him.
And that's like, if you're looking at what Ryan's draft looks like right now, I just have it written down. By 109, he could have Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, Jahmyr Gibbs, and Jordan Addison out of this draft. And that's like a great rebuild start, you know?
Yeah. But then I don't have a second round pick, right? But I have a third and a fourth, yeah.
Correct.
But I'd have two more picks.
But you're also trading Tyreek and Chubb, right?
No, so not with this trade.
Not with this trade, but I'm saying in another trade, well, right?
Yeah, I mean, potentially. There's nothing out there yet, but...
Yeah, but I mean, if someone does offer you, because, like,
I could ask for, like, a second rounder for Tyreek.
No, you're going to get a first plus.
Yeah, I would need, like, 105, right? Like, 105 and, like, a second for Tyreek. Like, even though that's a moonshot, like, the dude still can produce.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to... If you trade Tyreek Hill for... in a pick in this year's draft, you should be getting Stroud, Young, or Jackson Smith and Jigba out of that pick.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what offers get sent my way this week, and then we can talk about them on next week's episode before I make any decisions with those.
Yeah, I would take I would take like 201 for Chubb or like 202.
Yeah. I really like this trade potential though that Tony has put out there.
You will not get a better offer.
I know. But I'm gonna at least take a day to think about it.
Yeah, as you should. I can't wait.
So say Ryan trades away Nick Chubb for like 202. The next players that are available, Jalin Hyatt goes to Tennessee, which I think people are going to be stinky on because Tannehill is not the best and his route tree is kind of limited. Hendon Hooker goes to Detroit. I know he's climbing up draft boards right now of getting a quarterback who can be eased into a system, but I know a lot of people love him. And I think Hendon Hooker to Jameson Williams is a very sexy thing I want to see on Sundays.
Amen.
I don't know who you would Jalen. Yeah, Josh Downs goes to Carolina. Like, if you want, need another wide receiver.
So if I'm looking, at the, you know, the list of players here, and I'm assuming after 109 when Ryan picks, I'm assuming Charbonnet's gone.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Zay Flowers, Quentin Johnson are gone.
Yeah.
And so that puts you at 201. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Ryan Luke Musgrave there and go tight end. You know?
Yeah.
Like, or Dalton Kincaid, like, whichever one of those guys you like best, I think both of those guys are going to be available around 201. And in a two tight end league.
And this isn't even me being a homer. I think the Luke Musgrave situation in LA is way better than the Kincaid situation in Vegas.
Yes. Yeah, because Vegas signed OJ Howard and they signed someone else too.
And the offensive coordinator abused the shit out of Schultz, right? So you know that tight end position is going to be utilized in LA going forward probably more than it was last year.
And I think Herbert just had like a kind of a down year last year, even though he still put up some good numbers. But
Shane watched every game, so he's always said it was play calling.
Yeah. Fuck Joe Lombardi.
I think he's gonna come back this year and have a year like he did 2 years ago.
And he had torn rib cartilage, so I mean, like, the dude wasn't playing healthy. And he had like a fucked up labrum in the end of the season too. So yeah, but I, again, non homerism, I'd still take Luke Musgrave over Kincaid there. But I'm also the giant. I'm gonna die on the Luke Musgrave sword on every league I have him.
Right.
Do the Bears play the Chargers this year?
Yes.
They do?
Yep.
Where do they play them?
I'm not sure. I know that they are the Bear. It's their time. Like, have fun, because y'all are going to get to beat the shit out of the NFC North, which is actually looking like a lot more of a formidable division than it was. You know, everyone's going to get their chance to beat the shit out of the Packers, which is good.
It's going to be Detroit's year, I think.
I hate to say it, man. I think it's Minnesota.
It's a glass cannon, baby.
If they nail the draft, what if Detroit goes Jalen Carter at 6? They get a cornerback, they get Witherspoon, they get a defensive tackle. Like, that defense, it was not the offense's problem that they lost last year.
No, because they were putting up, what, like 35 points a game every game?
Yep. If Ryan, if you move Chubb, and you turned Josh Allen, Nick Chubb, and Cooper Kupp into Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, Jahmyr Gibbs, Jordan Addison, Dalton Kincaid, and got your 2024 first back, that's like, that's money in the bank. Plus whatever you get for Tyreek.
Your speed running rebuild.
Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. Shane, what would you, if you were giving up Tyreek on a team that you're slow burning, that you're tearing down, what would it take for you on top of, if the only draft capital you got was a 2020, what else do you want with it?
What, like, we'll say mid to late, right? Just to be conservative.
Sure.
I don't know. I'd probably need like a gamble wide receiver for replacement level, like a Jahan Dotson kind of thing, where like he wasn't super sexy, but like I still believe in the talent. Or like, I don't know. Like, for example, before the Rams fell apart and Cooper Kupp got hurt, I traded him away for Drake London and a first. Luckily that first became 104 because the team fell apart. But if you're trading a top end guy, I would try to, like, Tyreek, who's, I don't know, what is he, like a top 6 wide receiver in dynasty rankings?
Yep.
I don't know. I would need, again, I'd need a first and something else, and like a replacement level player. Or,
well, since Ryan doesn't have a second round pick this year, would it be wise for Ryan to look at reaching out to teams to see if he could get maybe a 2024 first and an early second this year?
Yeah, I think that's the case, because I know we've seen a lot in mocks, at least for me, because I'm a degenerate in mock like every day on Sleeper. Josh Downs and Jalin Hyatt usually are like the turn at 201, 202, where Zach Evans kind of a type, where I think that's, again, a replacement level, believing in talent and getting a first. So it just depends on the manager, right? If the manager is like, oh, this is a good deal for me, where my 23 team, I was just cursed with injuries, or my team underperformed, but I'm expecting my 24 team to be really good, And that's kind of how I pitch trades, is I hit him with that compliment sandwich of like, hey, your shit's really good. Here's kind of where you fell apart. And then like, here's how I can improve your team. Right.
Yeah.
Where I always don't want to pitch them that they're in the championship, but I want to tell them I'm strengthening up their depth and their core. Where I think I would do that, right? Like you take like 109 next year and 202 this year for Tyreek. Like I think I would do that. I think I would do that as a rebuilder. Like he's approaching the cliff, right? Because he's what, 29?
Yep.
We don't know what's going to happen with that quarterback position. I know it. Nope. I hate to be negative, but I want to be a little bit reserved in the expectations of what can happen to Tua potentially, especially with what happened last season. But yeah, I think I would do that 24 first, and like I think the latest would be like 204.
Sure. I like that play a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Because I think you can really have people believe in themselves, right? Unless they're truly negative on their team or really realistic about their perception of their team, right? Like some of the teams I have where I'm like, I'm not competing for 2 or 3 years. Like, I know that's not the way to play Dynasty, but like the way my depth is, unless I hit every one of my picks and my rebuild story, it's just not going to pan out, where you can kind of proposition people to be like, hey, and like it depends on how people value picks too, where like there's people in my leagues that I offered like Tom Brady in before the trade deadline for like a third rounder, and they lost because they didn't have a starting quarterback in the finals, where it's like, he ain't sexy, but you know what the fuck is 311, right? Like, what is that to you? It's nothing. It's a garbage pick. It's a lottery take.
It's a great band for me.
So the Bears play the Chargers this year in LA.
Okay.
Bears actually lead the series, surprisingly. 7-6-0.
Okay. No ties. We're due.
Right. Last time they played the Chargers, though, was in 2015.
Damn.
So
that was the game.
Obviously, none of the schedules have been, the times and the dates have been not done yet, but
there was one time, there was one season, it wasn't 2015. Was, I want to say, 2010, 2011, where the Bears were looking like a serious Super Bowl contender against the Chargers, and Jay Cutler and broke his thumb tackling the defender on the interception.
Oh, yeah.
And he was out for the year.
That's right.
Yep. So, all right. So do we have any last landing spots we want to talk about?
We could do a quick one. Mims to Philadelphia. Tillman to New England, Rashee Rice to the Chargers, which I think is a good fit in the late third. Yep. Charbonnet, late third. I don't know where the A.T. Perry hype's coming from. That dude is somebody I don't ever want to watch again.
Yes.
A-Chain, the late third. It should be four. To San Francisco.
Interesting.
I think that's a Trey Sermon finish.
Sure. Zach Kuntz to Washington. Kuntz.
Dorian Thompson Robinson to Minnesota. I know we are big DTR fans here of Teddy Two Gloves.
Uh-huh.
Roshan to KC. I think that's very good.
I really like Roshan to KC. I really like, we skipped over Jaden Reed to Green Bay. I like that play a lot.
I got to watch his tape again because I deleted him from my memory bank.
Kendre Miller to Cleveland.
That's a good one. I like that. Even though I do believe that they switch their offense, I think he's a perfect replacement for Kareem Hunt.
Yep.
Boutte to Carolina. I know that's your value pick in the fourth. He has the potential to hit that Amon-Ra type narrative.
Yep. Sure does.
And I think I'd come around to that. You know what I mean? I'm being more and more convinced every day. I know I was completely out on him after the combine. But yeah.
So then let me ask you a question then. It's round three. You got your guys in the first couple rounds, and you've got your choice between Chase Brown to the Giants, Sean Tucker to the Bengals, and Izzy Abanaconda to the Rams. Who do you want?
I think I'm taking Izzy, dude.
That's my guy.
I know we've been on that shit, and I know fantasy analysts have been recently on that shit. But his athletic score is like 9.7 or 9.8. His production was great, right? Like, I don't, there's no way that the mocks I've been doing lately of him being in the third, I don't think he lasts. I think he goes, even if he's a fifth rounder, I still think he goes like a late second.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm taking him before. I don't remember Chase Brown, so that clearly it is indicative of his talent in my eyes. I know we have, you said,
Sean Tucker to Cincy was my other one.
I like that, but that O-line still is ass, right?
Ryan, like, what rookie running back situation do you like more, the Rams or the Bengals?
Well, what's going on with Mixon?
We don't know.
I think they're going to cut him.
Probably the Rams, then.
Even though the Rams have a terrible offensive line, I think if Sean McVay stays again, I think they find a way to, even if they're like pick 102, I still think they have the ability to utilize two running backs, even if Cam Akers is like coming back to form.
Sean Tucker, I feel like, can do both some of the things that they had Sony Michel do a couple of years ago, and also the things that Daryl Henderson did the last 2 years.
Which is weird to me, because like, we know Sean Tucker can catch passes. Same with Samaje Perine. But they didn't utilize him in that position, which sucks because like, you can play him as a slot player, and I don't think Zach Taylor is smart enough to understand you can utilize everybody but Higgins and Chase, right?
Zach Taylor is Matt Nagy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd rather have the Rams, and I think even though we have Tucker as our RB4, I think Abakanda is higher ceiling at this point.
When because the rankings are only 1/3, so or half the way done, right? Because you have tape score, athletic score, draft cap, and then team fit. And I think right now, Izzy is like my running back 6.
He might be going up though, because like Tucker, I mean, for me personally, Tucker is moving down my board because he didn't do his pro day. He's been hurt. Like, every mock we're seeing, we're not seeing him ever pop up, right? So like, if real NFL analysts are just not seeing it there, we might have just fallen live with the tape, right? That's just what happens. Like, you're wrong on guys.
I think when we have our final rankings, or when I at least have my final rankings, I think I wouldn't be surprised to see Izzy up top 4.
Yeah, for sure. That's like a Flowers narrative for me.
I could see my top 4 after the draft being, you know, Bijan, Gibbs, Charbonnet, Izzy.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think, so this is good for now. Let's call it a 76. Next week, we'll come at you with 77, and we'll get a trade update from Ryan, and then we'll review the film Black Sunday. So if you want to watch along, so we can have some talks, feel free. If you listen to this and you want us to like answer questions on air, we still have an email address, fantasy@gmail.com. DM us on Twitter. That's it. That's it for 76.
Hell yeah. Good 76, everyone.
Yeah. Happy Sunday, everybody. Whatever.
We're time traveling. Take care.
All right. Bye, guys.
Sorry, all listening folks.